The Medicare annual election period deadline is almost here. I'm Meredith Vieira, here with examples of people who started their search for coverage at myhealthpolicy.com. Meet Larry. He likes doing things online, so he started
at myhealthpolicy.com. I took my time and found the coverage I was looking for, and done.
Next is Mary. When she wanted answers, she picked up the phone.
I wanted a local perspective on plans, so I called myhealthpolicy.com and done. Switched to a better plan.
And Michael.
I met with a local licensed insurance agent face-to-face and done.
Go to myhealthpolicy.com to compare top-rated Medicare Advantage plans in your area, including $0 premium plans, or call 1-800-GO-START. That's 1-800-GO-START. Meredith Vieira is a paid endorser. KF Agency operates myhealthpolicy.com, not connected with or endorsed by the U.S. government or the federal Medicare program. A licensed insurance agent may call.
Increasing disposable income and a retiring population has contributed to revenue growth in the professional home cleaning industry. And COVID-19 has certainly added a heightened sense of awareness about the importance of clean and healthy environments. You can help people make the most of this new normal and stay safe by investing in a Mary Maids residential cleaning franchise. This is an opportunity to serve your community while enjoying the freedom and security of owning your own business. To learn more about this business opportunity, visit join.marymaids.com/podcast.
Wise Guys Incorporated Radio. You're listening to us on 107.7 FM New Orleans, United Public Radio. And we are here live every Saturday from 4 to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. And I want to thank you for joining us today. This is Dr. John DeSalvo, and my other two wonderful, incredible co-hosts are Billy Cotolo Jr. Hello, Billy. Billy was the soldier in the Colombo crime family, and his father was William Bill Cotolo, acting boss and then underboss of the family, and the famous Nick Christophers, who was the author of several books on the mob, editor of a mob magazine, and probably has known and associated with almost every famous mob personality out there. And we have a special guest today, Michael McCollum. And hello, Michael. Thank you for joining us. And
Hi, Bill.
Thank you.
How are you, Michael? Thank you for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely, bro.
And I wanted to turn it over to Nick, because I think Nick is going to do a proper introductions, and we'll have some fun today. Again, thank you, Michael, for joining us. So, Nick, if you can do the intros.
All right. Well, I'd like to welcome Michael to the show. He's a one-of-a-kind kind of guy. Around the show a long time. The Outlaws, and knew some of the guys in the outfit. So he has a colorful background, and he has a lot to share with us, and especially I think it would be great for Mike to explain how young people can avoid the street life at all costs. Just from his own experiences alone. So we'd like to welcome you, Mike, and we look forward to speaking.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Michael.
Absolutely. I should have brought a cigar, Bill.
Yeah, mine's in the garage, so, you know.
We'll celebrate.
Hey, Michael, you know, I mean, this is kind of very interesting when they said there's somebody who was in a Hells Angels biker and involved in the mob. And, you know, maybe I'll just let you start off and maybe give us an idea of how you got involved in all these things, wherever you want to start.
My childhood, my father was an associate of the Chicago Outfit. And you know, my house was blown up as a child. My father did something with an outfit guy, and some shit went down and some people got killed. And my father was going to make a move on a lieutenant of a Chicago Outfit. And, you know, with that, the guy got concerned, and he put a hit on my whole family as a child, which I never agreed with. Being half caliber, you know, half Italian, you know, you don't do that, you know, in my world. But as I got older, I went to go after these guys, and they ended up dying from other things in life. So it's kind of karma. I lost my daughter, 3 years ago to an overdose, and it.
So sorry to hear that.
It was a changing point in my life. You know, I was involved with three outlaw motorcycle clubs. I've never told on anybody. My name's not on anything. You know, whatever people do, they do. Whatever I did, I did. But I started acting alone, doing shit on my with myself, being kind of a lone wolf when I was in the Hells Angels. I didn't really get my brothers involved because, not that I didn't trust them, but our motto was three can keep a secret if two were dead. So, you know, and Nick and Billy, you know, you guys all know Chuck Zito. He was a close brother. New York. I spent a lot of time in New York, loved it. And actually, you know, my ex-brothers up there, we had carte blanche. It was like having a black card in your back pocket everywhere. You know, they got treated like, you know, the good fellows up there do, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I love New York and the scores, you know. I haven't beat up Jean-Claude Van Damme yet or nothing like Chuck, but he might be in a walker, but whatever the case
is. Well, Michael, Mike, can you give us a little bit of a background on, a lot of people don't really know too much about bikers, like what their, you know, experiences are on a daily basis, you know, a little bit of a window into that kind of lifestyle.
I mean, everyday operations was we were at war, the largest biker war in U.S. history against the Chicago Outlaws and on Rockwall. And, you know, we were outnumbered by a lot of them, but, you know, what we didn't make up for numbers, we made up in heart. You know, it wasn't about numbers to me. I was sergeant at arms. My job was to keep my brothers alive and myself, you know. So with that, we would go out, you know, and look for them, you know, bring it to them. If we ran into them, we tuned them up, you know. It wasn't about, you know, it was club business. Whatever we did, you know, I don't glamorize it in my book or, you know, nothing. It's not a lifestyle for many people, just like the outfit, you know. It's something that you're, you know, I was born into. My father, like I said, you know, I was groomed at a young age and it was the life that I was given. And, you know, now I'm not involved in that lifestyle. I have friends that are, you know, associates or members of certain things and I don't talk about their business or, you know, I didn't come on here to talk shit about my ex-club or, you know, nothing. I just, like we talked about, Nick, if I could help somebody, a child or disenfranchised youth to go a different route, it's worth it to me, you know? It ain't about money, really. It really
that's great.
Isn't about money.
You know, Mike, our question, you know, we see a lot about Hell's Angels on TV in Hollywood. What's the real story behind them?
It's probably
I mean, you need 2 hours to answer that, right? Yeah,
I don't have enough time, but it's probably easier to be an FBI agent than to join, you know, an organization like that. Let's be real. And I got my patch in 3 months, so not bragging, but I obviously had a pedigree that most people didn't have and balls that people didn't have. So, you know, with that. I learned a lot. I aged quick, but I think I look good for 51, you know?
Yeah.
God bless. You look good.
But yeah, the point is it's not pleasurable. You know, you got to sit with your back, you know, you got to be looking at all times because these guys are trying to knock your head off, you know? Yeah. It's just a reality. It's a constant war, you know, and you knew who was coming after you because these guys were, you know, we were all bikers, you know. No matter at the end of the day, you know, it's you knew who was coming. And you knew what you had to
do. Billy, did you ever deal with Hell's Angels when you were with the Colombo family or any kind of gangs on the street?
I met with one dude. This was in, I don't know, maybe 94? I had to go meet him somewhere. It was not too far from
Street Clubhouse.
Charlotte's. I had met up with this gentleman, and we had to get right into the city. And all he had to do was square up with me. That's all, money-wise. And he went up to the roof. He's like, come on up. And I'm like, to the roof? And up there, they had like a freezer. refrigerator, like tables, like to sit outside and ship. He went to the freezer, he got my money.
But then
the freezer, it was like a fucking jar of, I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell if it was ears or fingers or.
Oh, Jesus. Then yeah. It was pig's feet. Sure wasn't pig's feet, you know.
I didn't ask. I had all kids. I was good. But yeah.
At least you got paid, Billy. At least you got paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got paid, right?
Right.
At least I came back down those steps.
A real 1%er biker would have probably met you halfway. I would have or brought you the money. But that's how you think.
Let me ask you a question. Like, I think we asked this question of another guest. They asked, like, what's our daily routine like, you know, when we wake up in the morning? Is it,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, do you have a regular job? Do you, you know, are you scheming all the time? And, you know, we talked about it in, you know, from my background, but I wonder what it's like for you, for your pedigree, Michael.
Good question.
Yeah, to answer that, I would wake up. I would go to work every day for 30 years. I was a union laborer foreman downtown city Chicago for two well-known construction companies for over 30 years. And I would work and I'd get off at 2 or 3 o'clock and go train at the gym. And, you know, I had a gun card back then. I was smart and I would go to the gun range and I carried an automatic Desert Eagle, and I carried a 357 Colt Python. And that was my gun because I wouldn't leave bullets if I had to use it. And I didn't want to, if I got into a shootout with my brothers, that they wouldn't say that their gun jammed. So with that, I taught them how to fight. If they were fat, they lost weight, or, you know, they're going to lose their badge. You know, I was kind of a jagoff. We were at war, and then I had other brothers that were all about chasing women, and, you know, we had club war going on, and I would tell my brothers, this chick's going to lure you out in the car from the outlaws, and you're going to get whacked.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't be stupid and do that.
Yeah.
Let's keep a tight brotherhood here, man. You got a woman at home, you know, so concentrate on the club and then go to your family, you know. And then another thing that I had is, you know, if you were a potential brother coming to my club, and you would say, you know, I'd call you in to get your patch. You're a prospect. And I would say, hey, man, you know, if my kid or if your kid was in the hospital and I got shot or one of our brothers gets shot, what are you going to do? And they would always say, brother, I'll be there for you. And I would say, hey, get your shit and get out of here, man. If you'll give your family up, you'll give me and my brothers up. And don't call me brother, and don't let me catch you slipping in any place we go to, because I'll make an example of you. And that's how I live my life, man. People get a misconception. It's the club first. Real bikers and outlaw bikers, it isn't that way. It's not my bike and then my dog and my bitch or my old lady. We were Hell's Angels. We had class, you know. We hung out with movie stars. They hung out with us. You know, a lot of my old brothers, we had ties to organized crime. We were half Italian. Some were full Italian. We were just, you know, it was more conducive for us in Chicago to be that way, both sides, you know what I mean?
Right.
So we knew how to handle business. We weren't crossing, you know, stepping on the wrong people's toes, right, so to speak. And if we did, we would have a sit down, man. That's the way the club did it. And that's the way the Italians do it.
Yeah, yeah.
If something didn't work out and you had a beef with my brother, you know, yeah, I'll give the okay. Go fight him. And if you beat his ass and take his patch, I'll probably knight you with it and give your own charter at the time. I was kind of, you know.
Michael, I was going to ask you, what's the hierarchy of structure in Hell's Angels? Like in the mafia, you have the boss, underboss, capo regime, soldiers. Maybe you can go, you were sergeant at arms. Can you go over a little bit what the, you know, hierarchy structure was?
Yeah, you go president, vice president, sergeant at arms, security, secretary. He documents the time in the meetings, which we call church. We don't talk about club business in the clubhouses. We don't talk about predicate acts. You know, that's not what the Hell's Angels did. We would go on bike runs, and if you had a sidebar with a brother and usually the brother's wealthy is going to try to make you wealthy. Whatever you, you know, mm-hmm. whatever you do, it's not, you know, the club doesn't tell you to go out and earn the money and give us the money. It's not like that, man. I mean, is there certain higher, you know, officers that make money for the club? Sure. But, and then the sergeant arms is under, you know, under the vice president, and you conduct club business, security, you make sure, you know, any events, up and coming events, that you put a team together that makes sure no brother gets killed, or any out of town brother, any guest of the Hells Angels, for that fact, even a supporter. If a supporter gets beat up, we're going after the outlaws, and we're going to give them the business. That's the life I was in.
Well, you were like number three in the organization also, then, right? Yeah. You were like number three.
Yeah. And the sergeant arms, basically, when we had church, if a brother didn't raise his hand, and at the time, the president of the Hells Angels was my best friend. We were 16 years old. We met each other at a high school we went together at. He got into it with the dean, and he broke the dean's nose, and a big black security guard grabbed him by the waist, and we put both, I put them, all of us, through a window. We ended up next to a pool, and, you know, from that point on, we became best friends, and he's a bodybuilder. He ended up becoming an informant for the ATF, you know, whatever his deals was, and now he's professing to God, and it's for the wrong intentions, man. He's not helping nobody. He tried to put me in the joint in federal prison, which was never going to happen, because whatever I did, or any of my ex-brothers, was done under his directive. So with that, I got a freebie. I'm out here doing a book, and, you know, I'm not talking shit about my old bike club or any Chicago outfit, guys. Anybody I talk about is either dead in the penitentiary, or there's some kind of paperwork, you know, with their pedigree, or their, you know, them slipping or whatever they did. And I don't care, man. I'm like I said, I lost my daughter 3 years ago. My book's never too late to mend. And I just wanted to get right with myself and certain people in my life, and anything else, it doesn't matter. You know, really don't matter. At the end of the day, man, the only thing that matters is a couple of good close friends, your family, and that's it, man. You know, and your work. Your word, man. You know,
very true.
Our word is our bond, brother.
That's it. And it's a lost thing, you know, here, even here in Chicago. That's why I like New York so much. I mean, the pedigree was way different, man. You know,
a little bit.
And I miss Scores, man. I miss Scores. Tell me it's open, because I'm coming there in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to hang with you guys.
I think that would be a big bag. Nick, you wanted to say something?
No, I'm sorry. I think you wanted to say something, Billy. I'm sorry.
No, I wanted to ask quickly. Wasn't he the president of the Outlaws? Didn't he cooperate?
Yeah, actually, if you're talking about Orville Cochran, he was going to kill me and the president. There was a contract on us. They were driving around with body bags, and, you know, we were told that they were coming to, you know, knock our heads off. And they were making it known, man. They were just missing us by minutes. Yeah. And it was wild, but it was a wild time. But I actually, you know, I kind of stepped away from my wife and kids at the time. And I was all about adrenaline and keeping my brother alive. And he knew that nobody was going to keep him alive but me. And the dude that was looking for us was a bad dude. He killed two of our brothers and my ex-brother. And he was involved in the second largest car bomb in U.S. history on the Hell's Henchmen clubhouse on Grand Avenue, which, you know, that was the prospective charter to become Hell's Angels. And the Outlaws said, you know, fuck them. You know, we've been around since 1934. Who the fuck are these guys? And they weren't having it. So with that, two brothers died and many, you know, shootings and the bombings, you know.
You're writing a book, Never Too Late to Mend.
Yes, sir.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Like I said before, it kind of goes back and morphs from childhood. My father, you know, being a high-ranking member of two outlaw, original outlaw motorcycle clubs in Chicago and, you know, an associated Chicago outfit. My father's pedigree, he was Irish. He was a power lifter, 22-inch arms, natural, 5'5", bad dude.
That was my
tried to kill me as I got older. I'm sorry.
My arms were 22. That was my biggest.
Hey, I know. Yeah, I mean, for a little dude, 5'5", that's pretty big. And, you know what I mean? And he got a size from, you know, obviously his DNA and stuff, but pretty strong dude. He's 70-some years right now. I don't talk to him. I really don't care for him. He tried to run me over and kill me on my Harley years ago.
Really?
Just family bullshit, you know? And basically, what it is, my father was abusive and he was a bad man. And he was a drug kingpin. He sold a lot of cocaine and did plenty of fed time. And he beat my mother and me and my brother. And as I got older, I wanted to become something he would be afraid of when I got a hold of him. And that day came when he got out of federal prison and he made my mom cry for the last time. And that was it. You know, I tuned him up and I didn't feel bad. Probably should have, but, you know, till this day, and I don't like to fight, but I never go into battle thinking I'm going to lose because I see his face. And for that, they nickname me Rhino and it's tattooed on my hand. Usually when I hit somebody, they don't wake up for a little while. But I'm not 300 pounds anymore on steroids, but I'm 245, but natural. Nice. You know, but it ain't size. Bruce Lee weighed 135 pounds. So
yeah.
It's in your heart. That's it, man.
Do you still work out, Michael?
I work out every day, and I train in martial arts. I'm a black belt in Hapkido and Taekwondo, which nowadays the Hapkido is great, but Taekwondo, kick high and die. When are you going to be in a room, you're going to kick somebody's head nowadays?
Well, usually you look good. My son is a fourth degree
black belt in Taekwondo.
Nice. So, you know, I mean, it's good if you're in a bar and you get guys back, 2-3 guys, you'll take them out. But, you know, the Hapkido is more, I use your weight to break your shit, you know, your wrist, your arm, you know, certain things. And now I'm training doing Krav Maga, if you ever heard of that. It's an Israeli military martial arts, which is, they show you how to kill, man. And that's what I want to learn. Not that I want to kill anybody, but, you know, if somebody, a protester comes and tries to, you know, jumps out of a tree, that's a tree hugger and wants to hurt me, then there's a different story.
You want to be able to just subdue. You want to be quick. Right. You know, I'm 50. I just turned 50.
You look good. Though.
Thank you. I feel good. But, you know, things need to be quick.
Right.
You know, if a guy puts his hand on you, it needs to be over within 5 seconds, you know, pretty much. I don't anticipate coming across those problems. I don't anticipate me having to pick my hands up.
Well, it's a respect we carry. Nobody fucks, you know, no guys like us, Bill, they don't. But, you know, usually, and I've been going out a lot lately. I'm kind of, you know, doing my own thing. And everybody treats me with respect still wherever I go. If somebody knows me or runs into me or, you know what I mean? And it's just the way you carry yourself, though. You know that. You know our pedigree. And, you know, we're not going to let somebody punk us out or treat us like, you know, or anybody but good guys. You know what I mean?
That's right. Not going to treat us like that.
Right.
So, Billy, you just turned 50. Yeah. Michael, you're 51.
Yes, sir. January 1st, 1969.
Wow. And you look great. And Nick doesn't look a day over 80. Really impressive.
Nick, you look good.
You're funny. You're funny. Yeah, you
look good. No.
I'm the oldest one, but you know, I don't give my age. But, you know, this is really fascinating, Michael, because like one of the things of our shows is that to warn people of the life and your example, your goal now to help others. Like when you said, if you could just help a couple people, I admire you for that, that you're trying to be out there to do something that's important for society. And I'm very grateful to you for doing that.
Hey, Michael, for the younger guys that are listening to us, what would you say would be a red flag, so to speak, if they come around some, you know, young guys on bikes, you know, maybe tatted up, maybe hanging out at a pool hall, whatever the case may be, they might like it. How does it start? Like, do you just keep walking? Do you say, hey, let me try to talk to these guys? Like, how does it work?
Usually, I mean, people would come up to us because everybody wanted to be a Hell's Angel. I never really gave a shit. I'm going to be honest, no disrespect to my old club. My father was in an opposition to these guys. And there was a confederation many years ago in Chicago where these guys were told if they come down past the Mississippi River, south of Minnesota, they were dead, man. They made it here and they solidified. They were outnumbered by everybody. And my ex-best friend became the president. And I was in another bike club. And I drove by these guys and they yelled some shit to me. And they used to be Hell's henchmen. And I was a DC Eagle. It was derived from Damon and Cortland on the north side. They've been around since the early 60s. They're considered an outlaw bike club. They don't fuck around. And we were a throwback club. You know, we would, you know, we would drive to Michigan to get a fucking six pack. You know what I mean? And take our sleeping bag off the front of our chopper and crash out on the side of the road, you know? So I drove by this bar, the Hell's Angels were at, and they talked shit. So I turned around, I had a chick on the back and I was separated from my wife. And I pulled up and they were like whistling and saying shit to her. And I was getting pissed off, but I was smiling. And I said, hey, where's Mel? And they said, he's inside. He was my best friend, even though we grew up in I said, you guys are kind of Stu Nod, man. You gave up your boss. You don't know what the fuck, who I am or what I'm going to do. So I went in there and I partied with him and, you know, piles of cocaine and more girls. And meanwhile, in the interim of this, I walk out and get back on my motorcycle. And there's pictures being taken of me from the opposition of them guys, which were cool with me because the DC Eagle was a main killer for the Outlaws. He was taking pictures and he went to my club at the time, the DC Eagles. And I went in the basement and they called me now for a special meeting. I knew something was up and my club turned on me because I was friends with the president of the Hell's Angels, but they didn't understand the dynamics. It had nothing to do with his pedigree of being a Hell's Angel. This had to do with he was my brother since we were 16 years old, man. And that was a bond that I was willing to break with anybody to keep my brother alive.
It's the, even though we fucking are, politics, man.
I know. And you know, and to make a long story short, I get out of there and quit that night. And my brother, my ex Hell's Angel brother, that was the president, he put a crew of guys together in a van and they were loaded to the heat, man. And they said that if I didn't make it out of there in another 5 minutes, they were coming in and killing everybody. So to me, that spoke volume. You know, it was powerful. Wow. It's a powerful moment, a cathartic moment for me. Then it all made sense, man. Fuck the death head and the red and white patch. This had to do with, these guys are my brothers. You know what I mean? It had nothing to do with, the patch just solidified everything. And you know, the patch doesn't make the man makes the patch. And I'll live and die by that. And all these kids now, to answer your question, they're being groomed, you know what I mean? The clubs are coming up to them. They're really going after guys.
The Medicare annual election period deadline is coming soon. I'm Meredith Vieira, here with examples of people who found the key to the right coverage at myhealthpolicy.com. Meet Larry. He likes doing things online.
I took my time and found the best Medicare Advantage plan for me at myhealthpolicy.com.
Next is Mary. When she wanted answers, she picked up the phone.
I wanted a local perspective on plan, so I called myhealthpolicy.com.
And finally, Michael.
I prefer face-to-face, so I chose myhealthpolicy.com and enrolled on the spot.
Go to myhealthpolicy.com to learn about top-rated Medicare Advantage plans in your area, including $0 premium plans, or call 1-800-GO-START. That's 1-800-GO-START, myhealthpolicy.com. Meredith Vieira is a paid endorser. KF Agency operates MyHealthPolicy.com, not connected with or endorsed by the U.S. government or the federal Medicare program. A licensed insurance agent may call.
Marines, Army Rangers, EOD guys, guys that have bombing experience, demolitions. They're going after military guys that they don't have to bring to a gun range to show them how to shoot. You know, what good is a 60-some-year-old washed-up biker that's 300 pounds, what the fuck's he gonna do for the club? You know what I mean? Probably not much. So
maybe
and don't let anybody get involved in the club that's 40 years and older. Man, it's new times, man. Let the new kids, let them run it and see what the fuck it's about.
If they do good
with the club, great. If they end up in federal prison, that's on them, man. You know,
Michael, did you have to worry about infiltration by the FBI like the mafia did?
Not the FBI, no. You could spot them guys a lot mile away, usually.
You know what
I mean? But absolutely. But the ATF, they were our common enemy. All outlaw bikers were infiltrated at one time or another by the ATF, man. They love working biker. And, you know, like I said, man, my ex-best friend, he ended up friends with a very kind of a famous ATF agent back in the day. And he ended up infiltrating the Hells Angels in Rockford, Illinois, which there's three chapters. There's Harvey, which they call it Chicago, but it's not. And, you know, there's South Bend, Indiana, and there was Rockford. So you had brothers within, you know, 50, 60 miles. Yet if something happened to one of them, you could get everything going together and retribution was going to happen. But I was always, you know, I handled the shit on my own. Like I said, man, I would send the president one way and my guys, and I would go another way because I knew I wouldn't tell on myself, you know, and that's the very bottom line.
You sound like me. I used to say that to my old man.
Right.
Tell him, let me do this on my own. This way, the only person that can rat me out is me.
Yourself. Right. And people don't look at it like that. People will join an organization because they feel they're wanted. And when I say join, it's not joining, man. They groom you and they're watching you, man. If there's a chink in your armor, you're going to get fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're not going to come up and slap you and play games, but you're going to be sent down the road. You're going to invest a lot of time and you might invest years, you know, 3 years. I've seen brothers 3 years to be a prospect. Not that they weren't trusted. It's one man, one vote. If you got one potential brother that doesn't like you, chow bail, you know, chow, man, you're done. Get the fuck out. It was a democratic vote. One man, one vote. But that's what I like. There was no one dictator, but in the end, there was several dictators. Several guys get rich, and, you know, I wasn't into that, man. You know, I'm my brother's keeper. If you're going to be a millionaire, so am I. You know, this isn't a club about. Yes.
You came across Joe Lombardo, the clown, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's a little story to this, man. It might freak you guys out a little bit. But I'm partners with Joey Lombardo, killed my good friend, my dear friend, Joey Seifert's father.
Really?
Which led to the family secrets and the whole nine yards. Me and him are involved in a docuseries about both our lives. His life story is separate than mine. But him and I are involved in a podcast coming up. A true crime podcast, which is going to be a little different, obviously, because we both have biker pedigree. Joey knows all my old guys, the Angels. Joey was loved. Joey was named after the clown. I don't hold anything against Joey. His father was, something terrible was done to him in front of my brother and my partner. He's seen it as a child. His book is out. It's called Deadly Associates. Could be found on Amazon. I appreciate if you guys could plug him. He's a great dude. You know,
sure.
What else could I say, man? I mean, he comes from a great family. Whatever his dad did, he did. You know, like club shit, it's club business. You know, it's outfit business. I don't stick my nose in it, but do I think it's a coward ass act to whack somebody in front of their kid? That's some pussy ass shit. Come get me. You know, like I say, man, the one thing about the bikers, they're going to come get you face to face. The Italians, your best friend's going to lure you to your fucking death and bring you into the delicatessen. And, you know, pops that just, you know, retired as an old outfit guy, 80 some years old, he's going to be the one to pour you the coffee and, you know, two behind the ear and you're dead, man. And that's pretty much it, man. I just don't want to see nothing happen to anybody I love or care about to get involved in this lifestyle, man. I still ride. You know, do I go off certain places where I kind of have anonymity? And yeah, I do. Not because I'm afraid to run into nobody, but I'm afraid to go back and be who I was if somebody provokes me.
Right.
I won't think twice to take a life if somebody fucks with my family or somebody I love. You know, I'll go medieval, and I don't want to do all that. I got too much going on. Somebody owns the rights. Octane Productions in Chicago owns the rights to my life story. And, you know, there's certain things I could talk about, certain things I can't. You know, I'll be in New York in a couple weeks, man. We'll sit down and I'll tell you about the 100 people I killed. No.
But look,
we'll sit down and we can hang out, man.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt. That I love you. We're definitely going to get together. And you're going to have to teach me how to ride.
Oh, man. We'll start a charter, the Gotham City. I don't know. We'll figure a name out. No.
But listen, do you make fun of those guys that ride those bikes with the two wheels in the front and the one in the back, or vice versa?
Hey, bro. No, you know what, man? I'll be honest with you. I used to ride a 280-mile-an-hour crotch rocket, Hayabusa. As long as you don't wear a helmet, man, I don't judge you. I don't care if you're on a pink fucking scooter, man. Really? Right. You know, I my ex-girl rides a Harley, man. I mean, I love it. That turns me on. A chick that rides a bike? Fuck.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I got taught how to ride. That's the whole thing. I don't know, man. I tried once. I think I made it half a block, and I wound up underneath a bus.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, bro? It's just like life, I say. It's one down, five up. You know what I mean? You go down once and you're all the way up, man. You know, and that's the pattern of Harley shifting, actually. If you know how to drive a stick shift, you'll know how to ride a Harley. I'll show you in an hour. Make you the El Presidente.
let me mention that Mike and Billy, you guys have a very somewhat similar kind of his background, you know, with his father, slightly different than yours, Michael. But Billy, also like you, not the kind of guy that's going to look for trouble or look for violence or raise his hands or anything. It's like you. But I know with Billy, can admit to this, that he's not going to hesitate if anybody bothers his family. No. That I know for sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure Billy.
I know him and he's got much love and respect for me and, you know, his pedigree, man. I mean, listen, the very bottom line is I usually deal with Italians with everything I do now. My director, my producer, my whole team that's around me, they're good people. Most of my team, like I say, man, you're only as good as your team or your crew. I don't like to say crew because, you know, that could be held against me in the court of law.
Really? Serious?
Yeah. As soon as you say a crew, it becomes a RICO act. Billy, you know all about it.
Hey, listen, I had a great idea. I had a really good idea. And you can, after we get off this call, you guys, you know, Nick, you could explain it more. What I wanted to try to put together with a personal friend of mine is to try to figure out a way where we could form some sort of a, I don't want to call it a gang or I don't know what we can call it, but we
hanging out.
Yeah, like just like guys from all different walks of life, but our message is the same.
Right.
You can walk away.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And eventually we can get on motorcycles or hop in cars or buses and do what we need to do. We start going around the United States.
Right.
Start talking to these youngins.
Kids
out.
That's what it's about, man.
Right? We got to give something back.
You can pencil me in, man, at any time. I'll talk to a high school, anything, to help kids out. Absolutely.
What would be a good contact information for you in case somebody did want to ask you to give a talk or whatever?
Hold on one second, man. I'm kind of new to all the social media. I'll give you my. I'm sorry, man.
Well, people could always
find an agent or something, a nice pretty agent. I was trying to hire a couple.
Michael, don't worry. People could always write to me also, and I could pass it on.
Listen, I'll later give you my Instagram. It's McCollum5955, I believe, if I'm right. If I'm not, there'll be another McCollum that's getting on the track. God bless. Joel Baylor.
Yeah, we definitely got to hit each other on Instagram. I'm simple.
Yeah, you know, Bill, you're friends with me on Instagram. We're friends. We follow each other.
Are we?
Oh, yeah, we are.
I have to go through my shit again. You know, I am new to this.
All of it but me, bro. Me and you will hang out.
All right. Because, this is all still new to me, too.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like a little kid. I'm seeing people hit me up. They want to follow me. The first question every single fucking time I look at the phone, I see another follower, I say, why? Why?
Right.
Why do they want to follow me? But then, when we do stuff like this and a lot of projects that we have to do.
You inspire people, man. I mean, look at your pedigree and the life you lived, I lived. Not everybody's lived our life, but I lived it on both sides of the fence, the Italian side, and I could get into that a little bit. What umbrella I was under. Sorry.
Mike, your book is going to be very interesting. I'm kind of excited about when that comes out. And now, like I said, Billy's on Instagram. I'm pretty much on Facebook. I think Nick's still on MySpace.
I get trouble by all my girls. My ex-girl was a Facebook. It is what it is. I get to see people I haven't seen in over 40 years, and I love it.
It's cool. Yeah.
I got some good friends, new friends, and that are successful, and old friends, and it's nice to be in comunicado. You know what I mean?
And now it's time for us to make some legitimate money.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It would be nice. I've been a professor most of my life, and a teacher, and to have somebody like you come into I used to teach in an inner city school at one time. To have somebody like you come in and speak to a class would be very effective. So I hope you consider
actually, I would love to do that. And a little back history with me, I'm not proud of it, but I was in prison. Obviously, you're going to be in prison at some point if you're involved in all this shit. And I went to a state prison for gun charges for shooting at a rival bike club. And I got pinched a week later. I got out on bond, and I caught another gun case in my Corvette. I had another gun, and the feds were following me. And it was a controlled pullover, and I got pinched. So I sat on no bond. I ended up in prison. I beat up a child molester. I ended up with an Aryan prison gang. They came to me. I didn't go to them. And I told them, fuck you guys. I'm a next Hell's Angel, and I'm a Gary Indian outlaw on leave. You join me. And they said no. And the prison I was at in Southern Illinois was controlled by the Ku Klux Klan, which it was called Klandalia, Vandalia, Illinois. And all the correction officers were bona fide Ku Klux Klan.
You got to be kidding. I never heard of that. That is so crazy.
I gotta ask you, Mike. Was it? But there's no such thing as easy time. I don't give a fuck who says.
Fuck no.
Did you feel that maybe because they were Klansmen that they gave you like a better edge than let's say the blacks?
Yeah, I got carte blanche, man. I'm not gonna lie. I got in there. These guys were wearing state boots that were fucking holes in them. I went in there and I felt like I was on a movie set, man. It was whatever I wanted. Then I got into where I had to be, and fuck, I had boxes of whatever I needed, sweets, everything. And then I found out I was a diabetic when I was in prison. I was out for 30 pounds. I was the 280, eating bonbons and shit and trying to keep size. And they don't want you to be strong. And I trained the correction officers some martial arts. Because I got down with somebody in there and I beat up this child molester, and the Aryans came to me, and I was told by the corrections officers, you have a couple years, man, hook up with them or it's going to be bad for you. I wasn't afraid of nobody, but I didn't want to have to get down, man. I didn't know the politics of prison. Here I was a club guy, half Italian, half Irish dude. I didn't know street fraction.
You're confused.
Brothers of the Gangster Disciples and the Almighty Latin King Nation. And, then I came tight with a lot of these chiefs. So if I had a beef with a white kid that was in a black gang that was talking like a black dude, and I just hung up with my ex-wife and she got me mad, I'm going to beat the bricks out of him, you know, and we're going to go in the shower. I'm going to go to his boss and say, I don't really like this dude talking to me like he's Tyrone Mahaye, you know what I mean? So I would tune him up. But what I'm getting to is I got swastikas that were, you know, I had put on me in the joint, and I earned them, so to speak. And I got a couple covered up, and I got one that a world-known tattooist in Chicago, a world-renowned, wants to do it on the news to show a precedent. Like, hey, man, people can change. I'm not doing it to get on TV. Man, listen, I got my own docuseries. I got a film crew here. You know, I'm doing it because it's a cathartic thing, man. I got some black friends. And you know what, man? I'm not on the racism shit, I guess. I mean, at my age, I don't care if you're purple, yellow, pink, LGB, whatever the fuck.
Amen.
You're a drag queen. I want to go to a drag queen show, man.
Me too.
I'm the first one. Maybe Chuck Zito will take me, Nick.
I want to go. you know, I've been dying to go for years.
Hey, find one in New York. I'll be there in a couple of weeks, and we'll meet up, Bill, and let's have a fun time.
Hey,
man.
Do you like Vegas at all?
Love it, love it, love it.
Good. Then you're gonna have to come rolling down there with me.
Absolutely, brother.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, I know Michael has an Italian background and association because he keeps using Stunad. And that's what I grew up with in my Sicilian family. The other thing is, hey, do you guys know, you know Stu?
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's Stu Gatz, remember that one?
Oh yeah. But my mother, my mother was from Calabria and her family.
Really? Yeah. Really? Oh.
My father was Irish, which was really bizarre to me growing up because my dad was a jagoff and my mom was a strong Italian woman. She didn't take any shit, but she took his shit. Kind of. It was a crazy dynamics, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
And my mother died of a brain aneurysm. She was a beautiful woman. She died at 47 years old.
Sorry.
You know, that's terrible.
It's a terrible thing, you know. I was, you know, my mother and me and my brother, you know, and I had two little sisters that are twins. My one sister is very successful, owns a bridge company, Union Bridge Company here in Chicago. My other little sister is you know, a huge mortgage president of a bank, it's starting to pick up here in Chicago with the housing market, which is great. Go Trump. Go Trump.
Go Trump.
All right, baby.
Four more years.
Go Trump.
Years.
Yeah. Hey,
and
you know,
Donald
Michael.
Trump is, he's a real dude, man. He wants everybody to be wealthy like him and pick a brother up. And you know, the Democrats want to keep you fat and, you know, pay your bills, Aaron. Fuck that.
Hey, Mike.
This is where we roll here, man. We're all unique, sir.
My dad told me from the second that my foot hit the street, he said to me, look, he used to call me Willie. He said to me, Willie, handed me a pistol. This was during the war, the beginning of the war.
All right.
Willie, any monkey can pull a trigger. Any monkey. But it takes that much more of a man to put his hand out to help up his fellow man.
That's nice.
And let me tell you, I carried that with me. That's why the day he got killed, look, I know the life. I know how it works. But, you know, we kept him alive through a whole war. It took years to get to him. And I always think back to that one comment, and I say to myself, you reached your hand out one too many times.
Right. So you know what I say. It's usually the guy that the closest with you, man. And that's you know, that's how it is. But to get to the pedigree of who I was under the umbrella, was a guy named Tony Calabrese. They call him Tony Tough Guy. His father was an outfit guy out of Cicero. And you know, here in Chicago it's you know, one boss and it's several crews. It's not like New York, the five families, the Colombos, you know, the Lucchese's, the Gambinos, all that. And, you know, I always kind of laugh because when I'm in New York, I could always spot a, you know, a wise guy. He's got a tracksuit on. Here in Chicago, you never know who these guys are. It could be half black. I mean, seriously, the associates here are, you know,
you'll never pin me out.
Right. Right. You were in like
tracksuit. Wait a minute. I live with all the old people, man. I start walking around with all time. My hair's white. I get out like this, you know? Got my cigar.
Right. You know, I don't know how much time we have left, but I just want to first thank Michael for coming on the show because your stories have been incredible, and I think there's a lot of good you can do. I'm looking forward to your book and your TV specials, and hope you come back on again. You know,
my brother Bill, you're my brother, and Johnny. We're brothers.
You got a brother's life now here.
Not a couple weeks. Soon. I'm trying to pencil something in. I got a couple of things up there going on.
Hey, anything you might need help with or anything you can throw my way, you let me know.
Absolutely, Python. I got you, man. Thank you. And same goes here with all three of you guys.
When we get off, Nikki, give him my phone number, right?
Yeah. And okay, I will.
Right, so he has it.
I'll text you, Billy, and you'll have my number right away.
This way,
go ahead, Bill. I'm sorry.
I might be down in New York in another couple of weeks. So.
Oh, that's right. You're in Vegas. I'm sorry. I forgot, man. Right on.
Yeah, no, I'm in AZ.
Oh, okay. I got it. Okay. It's even better.
Hey, how's New York with the COVID, Nick? It's getting better or worse? It's rising up here. I'm in Minnesota, and it's really peaking the highest.
And the takeoff A-land, huh, where they all say A.
It's okay right now. It's not all that bad. It's getting a little bit better, thank God.
Well, my daughter's involved.
It's all that other bullshit.
She works for the big pharmaceutical company. She's a biomedical engineer and actually is doing a trial. And very interesting. I think there's good news coming, but that's about all I know.
Is it going to be a company?
She works for Sanofi. She's a biomedical engineer. And her husband is her boyfriend, or whatever. He's working directly on the vaccination project. And they're packaging it for distribution. And you get the two shots. The first shot is not really anything that does anything. You come back 3 weeks later, and then that shot is the immunization shot. And then but the question is how long it lasts. And the only side effects that she told me about is that she doesn't know if she got, they don't know if you got the placebo or the real one, but right. Some have been getting the chills. So it looks like getting the chills is going to be a side effect, but that's not so bad, really. But let's hope it works, and let's hope the trials pan out, because I'm sick of this goddamn.
Well, let's hope
whatever.
It all works out, you know, for everybody in the world. But
yes.
That being said, right. Maybe we can get you a new mob hat. Maybe we could put, you know, maybe get a different background for you. You know, you'd be swimming in money soon.
I want a mob hat to help with the background.
That's all right. When I go to New York, I'll take it off some guy's head.
There you go. Make sure I don't get the head too, okay? Just a hat.
Now you want to be picky, huh?
Yeah, that's the fun part.
Yeah, that's funny. But I don't know how much time we have, but any last minute comments by you guys, Billy, Nick?
I want to say thank you to Michael. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Billy. It's an honor, brother. It's an honor with all you guys, man.
It means a lot. You know, Nick brings on some really good guests. Every once in a while, he brings a dud, but. I have to say, I didn't know where the show was going to go. No, all joking aside, you're a sweetheart. And you're educated. And
thank you, John.
And you care.
I do care.
That's what's important.
Yeah, definitely. That's what's
important. People that usually meet me look at me a certain way, and if they're true, you know, potential friends or whatever, they say, hey, man, you're totally different than you look. And I kind of didn't ever like that, but now it's kind of cathartic, and I do like it. Because I still look like a badass. Obviously, I'm not slipping for some, you know, young punk to come and, you know, take me off my game. That ain't happening, man.
Nah.
I'm too far.
We never get complacent.
No. Michael, we feel you're a brother to all of us, and I hope you accept us as your brothers. And this has been wonderful. I tell you one thing. You've gone through a lot. I feel bad about the deaths in your family, and you seem like you're doing good. You got a good career ahead of you, and you're going to be helping a lot of people. And God bless you, my friend. And we're here to help you if you need anything. And
brother,
Nick, did you want to say any final word? Maybe close it out, or
yes, Nick.
Sure. I'd like to thank everybody for being here today. Billy, along, making it even more, special. And Michael, definitely appreciate you being here and offering your thoughts and information to listening. And we'd love to have you back on again.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take care of yourself and be safe, too. You know, be all safe, right, my friend, my brother.
Much love. Much love to everybody.
Much love and respect to you, Billy, Nick.
Thank you.
We're going to be the rest of our life. We'll help each other and always stay humble and help other people, man, and not talk about it.
Oh, definitely.
Right.
Exactly.
Take care, Michael. Thank you so much.
Remember, my story, I'm not a victim, man. I'm a survivor. And I tell you, that's what keeps me motivated, you know.
Yeah. Nicky, we're going to have a lot of things that we could do together.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Okay? All right. All right, guys, I'll talk to you soon.
I like
Thank you.
Take care, guys. Michael. Thank you. Salud. Thank you for coming on and your wonderful interview.
Absolutely. Salud. Salud.
With Joe. Salud. With Joe, we...
Let me turn you back on. Y'all good, baby. Y'all good. Y'all good. We just wrapping up. Now I'll let y'all run over since we started a little late. You know, there's nobody on right now because we're off this week.
The Medicare annual election period deadline is coming soon. I'm Meredith Vieira, here with examples of people who found the key to the right coverage at myhealthpolicy.com. Meet Larry. He likes doing things online.
I took my time and found the best Medicare Advantage plan for me at myhealthpolicy.com.
Next is Mary. When she wanted answers, she picked up the phone.
I wanted a local perspective on plan, so I called myhealthpolicy.com.
And finally, Michael.
I prefer face-to-face, so I chose myhealthpolicy.com and enrolled on the spot.
Go to myhealthpolicy.com to learn about top-rated Medicare Advantage plans in your area, including $0 premium plans, or call 1-800-GO-START. That's 1-800-GO-START, myhealthpolicy.com. Meredith Vieira is a paid endorser. KF Agency operates MyHealthPolicy.com, not connected with or endorsed by the U.S. government or the federal Medicare program. A licensed insurance agent may call.
The Medicare annual election period deadline is almost here. I'm Meredith Vieira, here with examples of people who started their search for coverage at MyHealthPolicy.com. Meet Larry. He likes doing things online, so he started
at MyHealthPolicy.com. I took my time and found the coverage I was looking for. And done.
Next is Mary. When she wanted answers, she picked up the phone.
I wanted a local perspective on plans, so I called myhealthpolicy.com and done. Switched to a better plan.
And Michael.
I met with a local licensed insurance agent face-to-face and done.
Go to MyHealthPolicy.com to compare top-rated Medicare Advantage plans in your area, including $0 premium plans, or call 1-800-GO-START. That's 1-800-GO-START. Meredith Vieira is a paid endorser. KF Agency operates MyHealthPolicy.com, not connected with or endorsed by the U.S. government or the federal Medicare program. A licensed insurance agent may call.